Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. Our speaker is Jan from Levittown.
Hi, I am Jan, and I am an alcoholic. You know, more important than being an alcoholic, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I say that for one reason. Some people may never find these rooms and find the solution that we're offered here. Some people come in and out and fail to enlarge their spiritual life and grow along a certain line. And some people die during the process of what it takes to get in here. And, you know, fortunately for us in here today, that's not the case. And, you know, it's absolutely an honor and a privilege to come out and do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. I could spend a lifetime being of service to Alcoholics Anonymous and not be able to ever repay the debt of what was so freely given to me by the love and compassion of the people just like you in these rooms who helped me when I came through the doors. And, you know, this whole program absolutely blows my mind all the time. I don't understand the magic that happens in these rooms and the magic that happens between people, but it's wonderful. And, you know, I'm going to keep everything out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous to alcohol, but I will state this for, like, identification purposes, that I will absolutely do anything, I'll take any action, and I'll put anything in me to get me out of me, to get me free from myself, and to give myself some kind of ease and comfort in life. And I did that my whole entire life until coming into this room, only to find what I was always looking for and searching for, which is myself in here and this power that lies deep within all of us. And it's truly miraculous. I'm not the person I ever was most of my life. I always knew there was a good person in here dying to come out, crying to come out. I just didn't know how to be that person. And it doesn't make me a bad guy. Did a lot of actions and did a lot of things that aren't me, and I hated myself for it. But, you know, through this process, through our 12-step program, through the big book, through good sponsorship, and through loving and caring people, I've been transformed. I've been changed. There's been an internal shift in the way I think, feel, and act in life, and it's a constant process. New things resurface. New things block me off. I get new ideas, new prejudice in my life on a daily basis. And these unhealthy dependencies upon worldly things have to be cut, otherwise I cannot be free, and I can't be of use to anybody when I'm like that. And that's really what this whole program is really leading up to. Our whole 12-step process is leading up to helping another person who's still suffering. Hence, me forgetting about me and turning my attention to others, I become free, and I find myself. And what a great deal that is. You know, what a great deal. Me not thinking about me and I end up being okay. Something greater than me takes care of me. And for me to even be talking about any type of spiritual principles or say that I have beliefs in higher power is a miracle for me. Especially with the way I used to think and act and the person I was and the person I became. I don't get into a lot of like war stories. Because if you're anything like me, I'm the type of person who will try to separate myself and say that I'm not like you. And I'll come into these rooms and I'll hear four things that might be like scenarios or situations that I can identify with. Like maybe somebody ending up in jail or somebody getting a DUI, this, that, or the other thing. Doesn't matter what it is. And then I'll hear one thing that I didn't do. And I'll go home with that and I'll separate myself saying, see, I'm not like you. I don't need this. I don't need the spirituality stuff. I don't need this higher power stuff. In fact, the idea of it is kind of scary. I don't want any parts of it. You know, not realizing the dangers of this disease, the disease of alcoholism, and really, really untreated alcoholism. You know, that's what kills me. That's what brings me back to, you know, could bring me back to drinking or other actions that I take in my life to make me okay with me. You know, because I'm not a problem drinker, I'm a solution drinker. You know, I drink as a solution for living life. By every stretch of the means, and I'm going to get into this, the very first time I drank, By every definition, it was a spiritual experience. It transformed me the first time I put this drink in me. And I'll get more into that because I'm going to talk more about to identify with like what it felt like in here for me, as young as I can remember. The things I was plagued by internally, because I really believe that to be more of the disease I suffer from, and the reasons I search and seek for things outside of me to make me okay with me. The drinking came along later on in life, and everything else that came from that was bad. But, you know, as young as I can remember, there was this feeling that I couldn't really put my finger on and I couldn't really describe to you, that really I said to myself, I'm broken and there's something really wrong with me and I don't like myself. You know, I didn't feel like I fit in. I felt like other people were given like a guide for socializing and a guide for living life with one another. And I was like on the outside looking in on that, trying to figure out where is my place in this? Where's my place in everything? And I didn't realize, you know, I didn't realize why I felt this way. It doesn't matter why I felt this way. It's not important. But really this uncomfortableness in my own skin, this just an unease about me. And I do remember though knowing, I just knew like instinctively that deep down inside me was this good, loving, kind-hearted, friendly person just dying to come out and show you what I'm really about, who I really am in here. And because I felt like I'm broken and I wasn't this person that is already in here, I start to take actions based on self to get you to like me because I cared deeply what other people thought about me. So really what I'm saying is I didn't feel like I was one of and a part of everything and everyone. But I knew there was goodness in here and I said, let me stand out and get recognized. You know, let me show you how great I can be. Right. And going through this process and being transformed and changed through these steps, I look back and realize one thing. I can never be one of and a part of and stand out and be recognized at the same time. They are two mutually exclusive positions in life. And here I'm trying to do this to bring me closer to that, and I didn't realize all my life I'm just separating myself more and more from you. I'm just creating more of a problem and getting more and more lost within myself. I didn't know it, but that's what was happening. I started to get sicker. So I try to find different things to make me feel okay with me for periods of time, and I found different things, and these are just things that were personal in my life, and for other people it may have been other things. Okay, for me at a young age, I was good at sports. So I excelled at sports, and I grabbed a hold of that, and I ran with it for as long as it made me feel okay with me. Right, and then at different points there'd be other things. There's different hobbies. I did the Boy Scouts for a year and then got bored with it and moved on to something else. And then there was another hobby. I remember I took dance lessons when I was like 8 years old. Right? I usually leave that one out. It's an honest program though. And I did that for a year and I got bored with it and I moved on to something else. I remember I'd become really good friends with like a certain person and be their best friend for maybe a year or two. And then I got bored of them, I'd go find another best friend to hang out with. It didn't matter what it was, it's funny that the shine always wears off the stuff, and nothing really seemed to fit or last. The only temporary moments of okayness, the only temporary moments of feeling comfortable with myself through the recognition and the dependencies of others. Others dictated to me how I felt about me. It's funny, even today in sobriety, you know, untreated alcoholism goes underground and resurfaces in other areas of my life. And it happens automatically and unconsciously. I won't be aware of it until I go through some kind of pain and suffering, and the process starts all over again. That's why our process is beautiful. I reach a surrender within sobriety with different things. You know, surrender to my present condition, and I get to grow from it. That's what's great about this program. It's never ending. But, you know, like, it will resurface and I'll go on a shopping spree. You know, going on a relationship spree. You know, a money spree. You know, I need a new car. This, that, the other thing. The funny thing is, the shine always wore off of whatever it is. The shine just wears off of stuff. Just doesn't seem to last. And I'm going to fast forward to the time I'm 13 years old. And this is where alcohol gets introduced to my life. And up to this point in my life, I'm plagued by these things internally, these self-centered fears that I'm not aware of and can't identify, right? I don't know how to deal with my feelings and emotions and how to live my life on life's terms, right? I'm plagued with these moments of anxiety, this low level, this, like, uneasy feeling, just like all is not right with me. You know, at times a slight depression, you know, where I just feel paralyzed by fear, where I don't even want to get up in the morning and do what I have to do. You know, these are the feelings and emotions of untreated alcoholism. And here I'm plagued by these things, and nothing seems to be working in my life, and I take a drink. I remember it was whiskey. It was my best friend's father's whiskey. It was absolutely disgusting. We figured out that you could chase it with Budweiser, and the whiskey made the Budweiser okay, and the Budweiser made the whiskey go down okay. But a funny thing happened, and I remember that first time very vividly. Some people don't remember their first time, some people do. For me, I remember such a power flowing into me. I felt like I was better, stronger, quicker, and faster. I felt like, for the first time in my life, it did not matter what anybody else thought of me. It did not matter anything outside of me didn't matter anymore. I felt like I was okay with me for the first time. I felt so much stronger and so much better and so free. I felt freedom like I had never known before. Nothing else gave me that sensation of freedom, and the freedom from that bondage of all these feelings and emotions that are going on inside of me, like the way alcohol did. By every definition, it transformed me. I had a new outlook on life. I had a new freedom. I remember running around the neighborhood completely hyperactive, not even knowing what I'm doing. I remember looking up at the sky and thinking I was almost godlike. That's how I felt inside. It made me okay with me. And one thing's clear, and I understood this coming into this program, that my mind considers this a solution in my life. And I'm not going to think my way out of something that my mind considers a solution. You know, the disease centers in our mind. You know, it talks about this being threefold. You know, the physical part of it, but then the mental part of it and the spiritual part of it. The mental part of it for me is, if it centers in my mind, I'm not going to heal a sick mind with a sick mind. I'm not going to think my way out of it. I'm not going to cure my mind and my feelings with this solution that I have. I need a new solution. So, getting back to my story, basically, my drinking progressed through my teenage years, and I didn't look at it as a problem. It was a lot of fun in the beginning. I got away with it. I didn't get into troubles. I wasn't having any physical problems. I was able to slide by in school with no problem. I was in the top of my classes. School seemed very easy at that point in my life. I was just basically pushed through the system. I had a lot of freedoms. I had woke up to an empty house my teenage years. I had a father who worked. No one in my family's alcoholic. No one ever dealt with anybody who suffered from alcoholism. So they didn't know what was going on with me. I kind of were very good at being actors and showing everybody else I'm okay. You know, even when I started to get into little bits of trouble, my alcoholism and my alcohol problem wasn't my problem for many years. That was everybody else's problem. You know, my favorite line all through my teenage and early 20s, I said to my father, "Leave me alone, I know what I'm doing. Leave me alone, I know what I'm doing. Get off my back. You know, I'm living my life, you're not living my life." And the truth of it, looking back, is if you knew what it felt like in here, if he knew what it felt like in there, if other people knew, you wouldn't ask me to put down the one thing that made me okay with me. You know, because when I put that down and tried to do what I knew was right and tried to live a certain way, things just got so bad internally, and I didn't know it. I didn't know it at the time, but things got so bad that I needed some kind of relief. I did not know how to live life on life's terms. I needed something else. So, you know, this is just a specific event in my own life that propelled me into more drinking. The event itself, though, is not the cause of my alcoholism. You know, I'll use any excuse. I have an infinite ability to justify and rationalize what I do. You know, my mom was sick with cancer in my mid-teen years, and when I was 17, she passed away, and I said, time to drink more. Time to not deal with those feelings and emotions either. Okay? But like I said, the event itself is not, it doesn't matter. You know, if I broke a shoelace, I'd say, okay, I need a drink, you know. Because we are great at self-deception, I'll give myself any excuse. Because the truth of the matter is, look, I drank when things were great in my life. I drank when things were bad in my life. I drank when I had a great job. I drank when I had no job. I drank when I was in a great relationship. I drank when I was in no relationship. External situations did not matter. This is an internal job, an internal disease. And that's where our solution comes from. Our solution changes us from the inside. It doesn't have to do with the outside. One thing that's clear to me is the external world will never be a remedy for an internal condition of alcoholism. It just can't be. It won't be. So my drinking takes on more serious measures as I'm getting into my late teens. And, you know, it's funny how I never really wanted to take a look at what I was doing in my own life. And as I started becoming a person that I really didn't like, because I have to start doing things for the price of a drink. You know, I need to start stealing. I need to start hurting family members. I need to start lying more. Manipulating more, hurting the people that I love the most for the price of a drink, because I could not live without it. I could not live with it. I could not live without it, and I would do anything for it. And you know, I look back and I realize more and more how I made compromises of my own humanity. I would compromise myself, my own values, and my own morals that were inside. These ideas that I had of right and wrong, I compromised who and what I was into lower and lower forms of a human being until I was almost animal-like. Because really, all my actions were really based out of being reactionary in life. I reacted on gut emotion and feelings, and because I had no other way of dealing with them. And again, it doesn't make me a bad person. I didn't know there was something as wonderful as Alcoholics Anonymous, a 12-step program that changes you, you know. So as I as my drinking is progressing, and I'm becoming this person I hate. You know, I think about it as, you ever have that internal battle going on when you know what you're doing is wrong and you're actually starting to get tired of it? You're starting to get sick of the person you are and the way you're acting and the people you're hurting, and then there's this battle going on. There's this battle and fight inside of me, almost like good and evil. One thing was sure is this idea or this thing of this battle, internal battle and struggle and fight inside of me, really makes a statement that there's two of me. You know, one's the real me, full of love, peace, and joy and happiness, and one's this ego, this false sense of self that I created to justify and rationalize what I do in life, and it nearly destroyed me. Today, there's only one reason why I ever have feelings of anxiety, feelings of depression, you know, feelings of uncomfortableness or uneasiness. There's only one reason that ever exists in my life today, and it's when my heart and my mind stand in opposition of one another. You know, my heart is telling me exactly what I need to do, who I need to help, and where I need to be, and who I need to love, and who I need to be a friend to. And my mind has all these other ideas of what I should be doing. right? And when these two things stand in opposition, there's all this friction and all this resistance, and then there's that fight. And this always won the fight, almost always. You know, there were moments. You know, our big book talks, we have these moments of triumph that were short-lived. I had these moments where things seemed okay, but things only seemed okay on the outside, and they temporarily made things seem okay on the inside. But they were always followed by lower lows and more self-destruction. Okay. So, moving on, I had different ideas, different plans and designs of how I was going to fix me. By the time I was out of high school, I was always taught, you know, get a good job, go to school, get a good job, this, that, and other thing. I went to college, Westchester, for a semester and a half with absolutely great intentions and very inspired to change what had already been going on, because I had an inkling that things weren't going right, and the way I was living my life was not the way I should be living my life. So, I took me there. There's one problem. Took me to Westchester. Couldn't leave me back in Philly where I grew up. And despite this new beginning and a new environment, a new opportunity, you know, to make a different group of friends, because it must be the people I'm hanging out with that's my problem, not me. You know, I was great at playing a victim. It's my mom's fault because she passed away. It's my father's fault because he's at work all day. You know, it's everybody else's fault, not mine. It's the people I'm hanging out with that's causing this. And wouldn't you know, I just fell into the same crowd and doing the same things. And after a semester and a half, after practically failing out and becoming a person that I despised even more than I ever did before. Like I said, more compromises of my own humanity. Becoming this person, getting involved with things outside of alcohol, and becoming a criminal, a lowlife in society. I realized that, hey, this isn't for me, this isn't working out. I had to face a great fear that I had, face my father, college isn't for me, I'm going to go home. And again, thinking that I'm going to make another change in my life. And I said to myself, I'm really going to do it this time. You know, had a very wonderful upbringing. I come from a great family. An older brother that I looked up to, who did very well in school, became a lawyer. You know, a very caring, supportive family who loved me so much that they would do absolutely anything to help me. But you can't help a person who doesn't want help. You know, the greatest gift I was ever given by my father was him letting go of me completely. Him locking the doors, telling me to get out, and putting me out on the streets saved my life. Okay, and today we're best friends. You know, he's my bud today. He's a spiritual advisor of mine, and I'll get into a little bit of that later. So again, here I came home with that absolute determination to do right by my family, to do right by my mother, to do right by me. And for 18 months, I went to computer technical school for an associate's degree, and I worked full-time, completely disassociated myself with everybody and everything, and that's all I did day in and day out. Did not go out on the weekends. You know, I deleted all the old phone numbers. I made an honest attempt to change. And I was very successful those 18 months. And I got my associate's degree, right? So I basically had this plan and this design of what's going to make me okay with me and what's going to make me happy. Every decision I've ever made in my entire life was honest to God to make me happy. why would you ever make a decision that says, I really hope I end up miserable? You just don't do it. That would be real insanity, right? I really hope this makes me miserable. No, everything I ever did was to make me happy. And one thing was clear, that no matter what periods of success I had, I always ended up miserable. I always ended up feeling like I'm missing something, that there's something empty inside, there's something that's not filling me enough, making me feel okay. There's always something I could not put my finger on that was missing. And, you know, I complete the schooling, I get a great job out of that, and I drink to celebrate. And keep in mind, I had no intentions of quitting drinking and anything else I was doing. I just said I'm going to apply myself and change my life based on what I think, my ideas of what makes me successful and makes me okay with me. The things that I've been taught from a young age, you know, do this, do that, do that, do that, and then you'll be happy. And then it's like, well, maybe I need this, and then I'll be happy. Oh, maybe I'll need that, and then I'll be happy. It's always something else. You know, any goal I've ever reached in my life, if I reach that goal, you know, the alcoholic mind and this thinking and this ego always told me that you didn't set your goal high enough. You couldn't have possibly accomplished what you set out to accomplish. Why? Because I always said that there's something wrong with me, so I'm broken, you know? I'm no good. How could I do something good? I'm no good. Self-hate. So for the next 6 years from that, you know, this is a progressive disease, a progressive illness. And everything in my life just spiraled out of control for the next 6 years. And that's not to say I didn't do things that were very successful. I started a business. I started a computer business. I made a lot of money. And like I said, I will justify and rationalize everything I do to make me okay with me. And I said, as long as I'm paying my bills, I'm okay. You know, so if I'm living a certain way and maintaining a certain way, right, I'm trying to wrest satisfaction and happiness out of worldly things and things external to me. Not understanding that I'm destroying myself more and more. I'm dying more and more. All along through the next 6 years, I became this person that I won't even go into details of, because I'm not here to share a problem. I'm here to share a solution with you. You know, these things and that I did were never me. All along, I was crying inside, screaming inside, let me out, let me come out. Jan and Hare want to come out and be alive. And I just didn't know how. So I brought myself, you know, the term that I like that they put in the big book is incomprehensible demoralization of oneself. You know, that really spoke to me when I read that. You know, because I became an animal. I didn't know who I was. I was completely lost by the end of this 6 years. I was 27 at the time. My father finally turned his back on me. No one in my family knew what to do with me anymore. And I didn't know what to do with me anymore. And I'm living out of my car on the streets, you know, for about 2 months. Still running a business, right? Spending every dollar I get on alcohol. And I just woke up one morning and absolutely sick and tired of me. Absolutely out of all ideas whatsoever. I was completely out of any ideas and options that I could come up with anymore. You know, people talk about like bottoms in this program, and you know, I don't believe a bottom has anything to do with what you lose materialistically. Everybody's bottom is the same. It's that point you reach where you're done with you, you're out of ideas, you give up, and you say, I just don't know anymore. I just don't know. And you ask for help, you know. And I got to that point. And, you know, for the first time in my life, I didn't want to die. For the first time in my life, and when I reached that point, it was the first time in my life I really didn't want to die. For the first time, like, I didn't realize it. I look back retrospectively later on, realizing that all of a sudden I was taken from this path that I lived most of my life on, and I was put on a whole new path, a spiritual path. I didn't know it at the time, but it was a whole different path I was about to go down, all by that simple bottom of absolutely being disgusted with everything about me. It was the greatest gift. You hear all the time, the gift of our bottom, you know. It's the point where I asked for help and went into a rehab. You know, I do believe we have such great gifts of coming in here that I believe most people live their life in this spectrum of happiness and sadness. Like, they experience, you know, a certain level of sadness and you know, a certain level of happiness, and they bounce between that most of their lives. But I think everything is relative, because my experience is I experience such despair and hopelessness that I now have the ability to experience such joy and bliss and love that I've never known before. I do believe that to be the gift of destroying myself and then opening up a whole new avenue of what we do in here. And I ended up in a rehab, and it's funny, if I had real good health insurance, I had to fight for 5 days. If you have no health insurance, you get like 30, right? And then I fought for more time, had to pay out of pocket, and then I fought for more time, ended up 13 days there, and I absolutely heard everything I needed to hear. And something was happening in my life that had nothing to do with me. You know, I believe when we finally give up and surrender to ourselves and surrender, you know, and say we're out of ideas, I'm just going to do whatever anybody tells me, that's where God started working in my life. That's where this power started coming into my life, and I didn't even know it. I knew nothing of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew nothing of a 12-step program, and I certainly was scared of any concept or idea of higher power or God or you know, whatever you choose to call this power, you know, I don't know. It's not for me to figure out, not for me to understand. It's indescribably wonderful. So, some funny things happened while I was in there, and a guy comes in to speak from Alcoholics Anonymous into the rehab, and he said everything. He was me. He was absolutely me. I took his number, and he said that he's from the Levittown area, and I said, I'm getting out in a few days, and up to now, my intentions were to, you know, maybe get back in with my father. You know, I'm getting help now. You know, he should let me back in, right? Let me go and be a burden on him. And a funny thing happened 2 days before I get out. This guy I became good friends with there, I had nowhere to go, and he was being interviewed on the phone to go to a recovery house. And I knew nothing about what that was. And he thought I was going to be interviewed next, and he hands me the phone. I listened to everything this guy has to say, and this thought came to me. I don't know where it came from. It said, stop being such a burden on your family. Try something different. Go and do this. And I told the guy I was in. I don't know where those words came from. I hung up the phone. And 2 days later, I get to the house. I'm not there more than 2 hours, crawling out of my skin, saying, what the hell did I get myself into? Right? What am I doing here? And the guy whose number I took comes walking through the door. And it's funny, you know, they're talking in rehab, you have to get a sponsor, you have to go to AA, you need to do 12 steps. You know, I just, for the first time 10 days before this, for the first time in my life, asked somebody for help. I asked my brother, take me to a rehab. You know, and now they want me to ask somebody, I don't know, find somebody in these rooms they're talking about to be a sponsor and to guide me in life. That's insane. You want me to ask somebody for help? I'm the guy who says, leave me alone. I know what I'm doing, right? And I'm there, and he comes walking through the door, and he's like, you must need a sponsor. I'm like, He's like, then we'll sit down right now. And he starts reading this book to me. And And things started to change. And, you know, it's just interesting, the people that get put in our lives. You know, I truly believe that whether we come, some of our paths cross once in life, some of our paths come together for lifelong friendships and bonds that are formed, and all of it is absolutely beautiful. Like me standing up here and just seeing everybody in this room is absolutely beautiful. I was talking to people before the meeting, they were saying it gets a nice crowd here, and if you would have told me years and years ago that I'd be standing in front of people speaking about a 12-step program and all of this, first, fear of talking in front of people was on my fourth step, so. But I started being guided down this path, and I'm the type of person, for me, and this is for me, I only will listen to somebody and follow directions when I'm absolutely beaten and broken. And I say this because I watch, it breaks my heart to watch people come in here and not get this. They fail to take action. They fail to enlarge their spiritual life. That path I was put on when I hit my bottom, I didn't know it. But, you know, I was basically given a moment of clarity, a moment of truth that put me on a spiritual path, and I didn't know it. You know, our big book says, you know, that we must enlarge this life, you know, through hard work and self-sacrifice. You know, it's not that I don't drink one day at a time. I try to grow spiritually one day at a time. My sobriety and the happiness and the love that comes out of me is a byproduct of the work that I do in this program. It's simply a byproduct. It's a gift. It's automatic. I don't understand. You think alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful? The 12 steps is cunning, baffling, and powerful. I don't understand how it works. I just know that these changes, the way I look at things in this world, the way I react to things, the feelings I feel today simply has something to do with the work. You know, it's simply a miracle and a blessing. It's not for me to understand. If I really understood it, then it would no longer be a miracle or a blessing, and then it probably wouldn't work. You know? So I'm the type of person that when I'm beaten and broken, that's when I'm going to do things, because you give me a couple weeks, you give me a couple months, give me a job, a place to live, maybe a relationship. I got this, and I don't need you. I'll just go to a meeting. I don't need to take a moral inventory of myself. Why? Because I got this. Look at me, look at me. I have a job. Look at me, I have a place to live. You know? Look at me, somebody loves me. You know? Like, none of that is real. That's something external from me, trying to be a remedy for an internal condition. You know? Really, I'm a person who got separated and put blocks in my life from this power within. You know, I like in We Agnostics, it talks about, like, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is this fundamental idea of God, that there's this power that is deep within us, though it might be blocked or obscured by pomp, calamity, or worship of other things. You know, and you know, I once heard a speaker at a convention use this analogy, and I kind of do some of this for my 10th step at night. It has to do with, like, worship of other things. And it's kind of like if I put a pie chart together at the end of the night of all the thoughts and what I turned my attention to that day, and there's, like, 20% for AA and God, and then there's 30% for a relationship and lusting over a woman, and then 50% for making money and my job. Well, whatever the biggest slice of that pie chart is what I worship that day. That's what I put between me and this power. I've just obscured and blocked the light and don't even know it. Don't even know it. And so I started upon, the recovery house I went to, they basically said you have to get an AA sponsor and you have to go through these steps the way it's written in this book. And our steps talk about vigorous action, you know, up to 1, 2, and 3. There's absolutely nothing I'm really doing. And this is just for how I took to it. I believe that, you know, when I got to step two, I didn't know. I didn't have a clue. My sponsor basically said to me that just the willingness to believe that he wasn't lying to me. And I knew he had something going on in his life. When he came to that rehab and spoke, he had a glow. He had sparkles coming from his eyes. And I was attracted to it, and I wanted what he had. And he believed in this process. And I didn't know if it would work for me, but I knew it was working for him. And that was enough to not get stuck. I don't get stuck in a problem. I move on in this program. You know, our step one talks about powerlessness. It's the only step that even discusses a problem. Powerlessness being the problem. The rest is talking about a solution. So I said, fine, I'm willing to move on. And then he's like, in step three, we're only making a decision to basically make a commitment to him and Alcoholics Anonymous to do this work, to find out really what it's about. You know, I truly believe that you haven't failed in Alcoholics Anonymous if you haven't gone through the 12 steps and sponsored people. You know, you can come in and out of these rooms as much as you want, and you can, you know, do a couple steps as many times as you want and end up relapsing and going back out and then coming back. But you can't fail at something you've never done. If you haven't gone through all 12 steps and sponsored people, then you haven't done the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You've just joined our fellowship, which is wonderful. I love our fellowship. You know, I travel all over the place. I go to different conventions. I go to meetings all over the tri-state area. I absolutely love the fellowship. But don't mistake the fellowship for our program. You know, those are two different things. The program is what, on a daily basis, saves my life. This is what I apply to all my affairs. This is where I have to reach these points of pain and suffering and sobriety, surrender to it, and revisit the work. Revisit the work. A life of inventory, life of prayer and meditation, a life of helping other people. You give me 2 weeks away from that, I start thinking kind of weird. I start judging people, right? I'm not so peaceful. Right? I don't feel so centered. I don't feel so okay. My mind takes me to places, and there's all this chatter going on. And then I can't sleep well at night all of a sudden. Sometimes unmade amends in my life will cause me not to be able to sleep well at night. And I never relate the two. My mind doesn't like me to see truth. My ego does not want me to see truth. The disease does not want us to see truth. But nonetheless, I push forward. Faith in this program. Working with other people is my key to freedom, and I believe the whole idea of unity behind this. It's kind of like anybody who's ever asked me for help, it's really, you forget about you. If you're interested in saving my life, ask me for help. I'll forget about me. I'm interested in saving your life. And together we stay sober. And I never understood why my sponsor, every time we finished doing some work with this book and some work with the steps, I was always thanking him for taking the time. He's like, Jan, you never need to thank me. I'm getting more out of this than you ever will. And I'm always thinking to myself, my sponsor's being so humble. He's just saying that because I know deep inside I'm getting more out of this. Until I had the experience myself, until I started sitting down with guys, and all of a sudden it clicked. My sponsor wasn't lying and being humble. He was getting more out of it. The student doesn't learn the lesson until he becomes the teacher. The truth of these phrases takes on new meaning when they become a part of your life, when you start living this way. So our whole program is really based on taking action, having an experience with it. Now, me up here and everything I'm saying will not change your life. Right? I've had my experience. I continue to have new experiences along this path. If you want your own experience, then you'll have to take your own actions and have the experience. And I relate it to, I relate the whole thing to this. Like, I'm not going to just read a book and have an experience. I'm not going to talk with people and have an experience. If you've never rode a bike before, and you go and read what it's like to balance a bike and what it feels like to feel the motion of pedaling, and you go talk with 100 people and their experience of riding a bike the first time, and I'd never rode a bike, and I never read any of this, we're both going to get on that bike and fall off the same amount of times. You know why? Because reading about it and listening and talking about it does not give you the experience of balance, does not give you the experience of motion and pedaling. You have to take the action, right? And my sponsor said, my sponsor loved me so much, he said, kid, you are dying inside. And unless you start doing this work and freeing yourself, finding out why you can't get past you in life, why everywhere I go, there I am, I can't get past me. What is it about me? What is it about these resentments? What is it about these fears? What are my character defects that I've been plagued by, that have been running my life? I'm so powerless. I realized after doing 4 and 5 how powerless I am over my character defects, that they ran my life. I was never in control of my life. I only thought I was at times, you know. And I started to get a sense of freedom and a sense of ease when I started taking these actions. And for me, it happened pretty quickly. And, you know, it's like anything. If you want to experience it, do it, you know. You want to have a real strong experience with it, you know, do it fierce and thorough and right away. That doesn't, you know, I'm not saying you graduate from this. I've alluded to the fact that I keep on applying this stuff in my life. I have to keep revisiting the work. But I had an amazing experience that first time going through the steps. And my sponsor's like, now you got to start helping other people. You know, continue to make these amends. And I'm like 30 days sober, saying to my sponsor, whoa. You want me to do what you just did for me? No, we need to go back through this book again. He's like, Jan, it's not about you. You've already discovered that you're an extremely selfish, self-centered person, right? And life is no longer about you. Just go start helping other people. Forget about you. And I said, well, I can't do what you just did with me. He's like, Jan, you were the first person who's actually ever gotten past step 5 with me. My sponsor. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, he must have sponsored hundreds of people. And this was just a guy just like me, 6 months sober, who was told the same thing, was given the message in a pure form from that book. Two people sat down, and their lives changed. And then that person sat down with another person, and my life and his life changed. And together, we started growing and learning and understanding what this is all about. And, you know, really, all the steps are designed to tap into this power, right, to produce this spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, right, that solves the problem, right? Like, the alcohol and the obsessions just removed automatically, a free gift. And you know what the real awakening is? This is the kicker. This is what I find. That it's not that I'm a human being having a spiritual experience, that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience in this world. And that's what it really is, that there is something absolutely wonderful and beautiful in each and every one of us. It's always been dying to come out. It's dying to shine. And my life on any given day is great when I'm not thinking about me. But the same is true. At any given moment of any given day, I can get into me and get stuck in me. And that's why we have each other, and that's why we have these meetings. And, you know, I feel very grateful and fortunate to be given the life I was given today. And, you know, with a little time, I'd like to share this when I have time. These experiences aren't for me, and the work I do here isn't for me. And it isn't just for alcoholics either. The way I live my life today and the way I've been transformed is for anybody who can bear witness to that, who they might be attracted to the light. And you know, the Big Book talks about how we're like a tornado ripping and roaring through the lives of others. Relationships are broken and uprooted and the home is in turmoil, right? My family suffered from my alcoholism, and they're not alcoholic. You know, my alcoholism was destroying them. They started to suffer fear, frustration, despair, and bewilderment because of me, right? And so we get this solution working in our lives, and we bring it back into the lives of the people who we've destroyed by our own alcoholism. And my father's a hardworking man that I'd never really had too much of a relationship with most of my life. I was very close with my mom. When my mom passed on, my father had to take on a new role. I'm already at the point in my life, well into my own addiction, where I don't need you. I needed you before, I don't need you now. I never gave him a chance. Never gave the man a chance. And I started living this life. I started making amends. It's funny how even with the amends process, it talks how our real purpose in this process is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to others, right? That just amending this isn't an end in of itself. And I was a year and a half sober, and I started to have some sleepless nights, and started revisiting my original four steps. I realized I never made an amends to my mother. I never went to the grave. I never wrote a letter. I never did anything with that. And I realized that, you know, I had to. And of course, it took 3 weeks before I even wrote the letter. I had more and more sleepless nights until it got so bad, I'm like, I surrendered. I'm like, damn it, I hit my pillows one night, I get up, I write this letter, I pour my heart out. I cry through it. And through the process, it's amazing. Once you start the actions, what comes out? You never know until you start doing it. And I realized there was things in there that my father needed to hear. And the next day, I call him up. It's a Saturday. What are you doing? Will you come to the cemetery with me? Went to the cemetery. I have all this fear going there. I have no idea why. And you never know why until you face the fear, come out on the other side, and it's removed, and then you know. So I went, like the good student of the 12 steps. I was told, do it anyway. It's not about how you feel and what you think. You know, go and do it. So I went, and I pour my heart out, and my father's there. In support of me, and there's tears, and there's freedom through it, and I get done, and we get back in the car, we're driving away, and there's this great relief in my heart, in my soul, there's that peace, and I realized right then first what the fear was. I was so afraid I would go here, go to the cemetery, pour my heart out, make myself vulnerable, and open up my feelings and emotions. I was so scared that I'd find out that I would feel nothing, that I'd find out I'm just a cold-hearted son of a bitch. And it couldn't have been further from the truth. You know, that's all a lie. These beliefs that we believe in, these lies we tell ourselves that from a thinking mind looking to destroy me, wants me dead will settle for me drunk. You know, I'm always plagued with yesterday and tomorrow. Oh, it's all up here, and that's not what's in here. And, 2 weeks later, my father calls me, and every year, once a year, my father goes up to see his own father at the cemetery, and this is how cool this program is. This is how, like, the actions we take today aren't just for us or for others. And my father calls me, and he's like, Jan, I realized something, that I have to make an amends to my own father. That he realized his own father only did the best with what he was given in life and what he could do. And even though his own father, my own father had resentments to his father for not being there as much, for always being away at work, this, that, and all this thing. My father carried this around, you know. And for the first time, he said, I'm going up there to make my amends and put it all at peace and at rest. My father started looking at different areas of his life. My father asked for a copy of the big book. My father's not an alcoholic. You know, he lives basic life by pretty much normal spiritual terms. I never saw it when I was growing up, but I realize it today. And, you know, we sit and we talk about this stuff. You know, and he's come and heard me speak at different places. And it blows his mind how I've been transformed. I'm not the person I was. And I like in the big book, it says how years of self-discipline could not have done for me what this program and this power does for us. That there's been this profound alteration in my reaction to life. And, you know, I hope that somebody got something out of what I had to say tonight, and thanks for having me up here.